This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
We are, the heads are bouncing up and down here, at least with Sue and I. Fred, you're not getting involved here in the Rick James, are you?
I like
you taking
a
stand against Rick James, are you?
No.
You know, it's Halloween, they tell me. Is that true?
Listen, I have no candy. I don't know how it happened.
Wait a second, what?
I'm going to have to go to Walgreens, like, I guess, right out of here. I'm just completely dropped the ball.
You live in the Holly Hills area. There's going to be, like, 50,000 kids. There's twice as many of the Trump rally in that neighborhood, right?
Yes, but usually they go to the, you know, the
main
hardcore
houses.
Main
the
houses.
The Steve Butts houses.
Correct.
Let's just put it that way,
Steve
right?
Steve Butts is getting all of my trick-or-treaters.
Exactly.
We're having our annual neighborhood Halloween party tonight at our house.
What does that involve, Fred? Sue and I have never been invited to the Bottenheimer's Halloween party.
It's called the neighborhood party.
Oh, okay.
So everybody that lives in the area, like on our block, comes to our house, and we all sit out on the driveway.
Sure.
We have a fire.
It's a South County thing to do,
Fred. We have the fire.
Do you have a couch out there, too?
No, but my wife just texted me, and she said, Fred, it's really windy. You're going to be in charge of the fire, so you better pay attention.
Yeah, so I'm a little bummed out because I like to do a fire, but that's fun. A lot of people in our neighborhood do the same thing, and then all the kids walk around. It seems in my neighborhood, like my daughter's actually going to a friend's neighborhood, and what's interesting about the neighborhood that I'm in is when we first moved in, all these kids were at this certain age where they were trick-or-treating. Now those kids are like junior, senior in high school, and maybe even some off at college, and there's a little bit of a turnover in the neighborhood with the younger kids.
Yeah.
What's too old to trick-or-treat?
They say after eighth grade, you should be done high school.
I think that's a good rule, right?
It's a good rule, but if you're a high schooler, at least dress up and be ready with a joke
so
or something.
One of the things that annoyed me about Wisconsin when I lived there, the People's Republic of Wisconsin, this is so weird to me. It's very bizarre.
It's because it's bizarre.
Okay, they don't. Now, I think this has been rectified a little bit. They don't trick-or-treat on Halloween. In many of the suburbs in Milwaukee, they do it like on the Sunday. Maybe it's in the Saturday or the Sunday before. During the day, the kids don't
That's just ridiculous.
This is America, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
That should not be allowed. But this also happened in Des Moines. And for the first time in a long time tonight in Des Moines, the kids get to trick-or-treat on actual Halloween.
Good.
Apparently, this is it. I did not know this. Or if I did, I had forgotten it. But they had some violence that occurred, like a bunch of vandalism that goes way back to the 1940s in Des Moines, Iowa. So they started something called Beggar's Night because they were trying to clamp down on the vandalism. And they said, I don't know all the details, they said, we're going to do it the night before Halloween to cut down on the vandalism.
Because of the 40s?
Yes, this goes back to the 1940s. So they had issues with weather last night, so they decided to call off Beggar's Night and say, oh, you know what? You kids, you can finally enjoy Halloween like the rest of the children in America outside of Waukesha, Wisconsin, and a few places outside of Milwaukee. But the thing that was really weird is that I would talk about this when I was on WTMJ up in Milwaukee. People up there didn't think it was that weird.
Well,
and it was like a safety issue, right? That's why they did
it. In Edwardsville, too? I thought there was Southern Illinois.
Right across the Metro East
community.
Yeah. Look, that's un-American. There's certain things in this country that should not be allowed and that should be allowed. And trick-or-treating on actually Halloween when the sun goes down, that's an American tradition, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Is Halloween politically correct to say? Because I just today heard an attorney in Philadelphia call it Mischief Night.
I hate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing about one more thing, and I asked you about this last week, Sue. And you know, my memory's not very good anymore because I'm an aging elderly man, as my daughter tells me all the time. Yeah, I'm right. But I don't ever remember so much reference to this being the spooky season. Like, I had to read a commercial copy about the spooky season. When did we start calling it the spooky season?
I don't know. I mean, that's better than calling it, what was it?
Mischief Night.
Yeah, that's really better than Mischief Night.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But we will go up to Wisconsin with Dan O'Donnell and check in on that state here after Sue's News.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, the Dodgers won the World Series last night. I figure you two watched it. Was it? I hear it was a great game.
It was a great game.
It really was. I can't complain. The Dodgers outplayed the Yankees.
Well, look, they went down 5-0. Right. It looked like it was going to be over. And then I'm getting harassed by my Yankee friends that I've been harassing, John and Jeannie Sullivan. And it did get my interest, Fred. And, man, I'll tell you what, the Dodgers just chipped away at it. And was it the eighth inning that they went ahead finally?
Yeah, but the seventh inning, wasn't it, when the Yankees fell apart defensively? Yeah. Fifth inning,
Ethan,
they just fell apart.
There were, I mean, how many errors? It was just a major collapse. The Yankees had that game, right?
So it was 5-0 going into the fifth inning. The Dodgers scored 5 runs. They were all unearned. I believe there were 3 errors in the inning. Aaron Judge dropped a casual fly ball that was right to him.
There was a balk.
There was a balk. There was a bad throw.
And there was an error of omission when the pitcher didn't cover first base.
That was the biggest one. Yeah. There was a ground ball that was hit to Anthony Rizzo at first base. There's backspin on the ball. Gerrit Cole thinks that Rizzo's just going to take it to the bag himself. But because there's backspin, Rizzo stayed back on it, and there was no one at the bag. Yeah. And that allowed for the inning to continue. 5-run score, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and they didn't pull Gerrit Cole because it really wasn't his fault. So they left him in there, and you know, didn't work out very well. The Yankees end up losing that World Series. Their big guns did not come through like Freddie Freeman. And I'm happy for Tommy Edman. I don't really care about Jack Flaherty, good riddance, but I'm happy for Tommy.
Yeah, me too. Me too, very much so. And for Freddie Freeman. Aaron Judge did start showing life in this last game.
Right.
I like the name Freddie Freeman, so that's what I have to offer.
That's the best name in baseball, Freddie Freeman.
You know, I meant to play this audio yesterday, and we don't have time for it today, but they did this feature. I forced Fred to watch it.
And I teared up.
Freddie Freeman has had an incredible stretch in his life. He lost his mom when he was 10 years old, but he also had a son that came down with Guillain-Barré syndrome. And I think his son was like under 1. He's okay now. Like, he's getting better.
Oh, gosh.
But they did this story about that, and they showed the relationship between Freddie Freeman and his dad. His dad started playing baseball with him when he was a kid. You know, they have a strong bond. And when he hit that grand slam last Friday night, he went up to the netting where his dad was sitting behind, you know, sort of first base, and just screamed at him in, you know, excitement and joy.
Wow.
And it was really, really cool. So if you can find that story, I would highly recommend it.
And Ethan tells the story about what Freddie and his dad, what happened there?
He saved his father's life.
Oh, that's
when
right.
He was, I think, 12 years old. His dad, out of speculation, Freddie took his dad or had his dad taken to the hospital solely out of speculation. The doctor the next day says, if your son would not have, you know, had you go to the hospital, you would have died in your sleep last
Good
night
grief.
Due to congestive heart failure. So Freddie Freeman in this interview was crying, saying, I was hours away from being an orphan. It's heavy
stuff. I said this yesterday, he's one of my favorite players. He has been for a while, so I was really happy for him. It's tough to win a championship. The Dodgers have now won, you know, 2 in the last 5 years or so, but I just kept thinking, Ethan, it's hard for me to fathom when the St. Louis Cardinals may be the caliber of team that can, you know, perform in late October. That kind of leaves me sad right now.
It's going to take a little while to get back there. They just announced today that they are declining the team options for Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, and Keenan Middleton. So the starting rotation is going to look a little bit different.
That does not necessarily mean that Kyle Gibson could not still sign as a free agent, right? There's a potential there?
Yes, but it doesn't really make sense to. They're going to get younger. They're going to get some young guys in the rotation next year.
We better get there quickly, because now the Dodgers have 8 world championships and the Cardinals have 11.
It would not be the craziest thing for the Dodgers to win 3 more before we win 1.
Don't say that. I don't like that.
49 years ago today, on this day in history, this is our only music bit here for today. In 1975, Queen released their Bohemian Rhapsody. Is this just bad?
You know, I think we all are aware that this came out in the mid-70s, late-70s, but to hear you tell me that it is 50 years old really kind of puts an exclamation point
on it. It does, doesn't it?
Wow, yeah.
It was the lead single off their fourth album, which was entitled Night at the Opera.
Incredible.
And you can see the video, can't you, in your head?
Oh, yeah.
Just their faces.
Is this the greatest song of all time?
No.
Is it close?
I'd say it's in the top 20.
Yeah,
top 20. I mean, you'd have to think about all the songs, but it is one of the...
Yeah,
I would put it in the category of the top of all time, sure.
It's hard to make that pick, but I mean, it's got to be at least an option.
Right, but if we're talking about Queen, you might have to put We Will Rock You into that mix as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. Oh my gosh, my brother had that on. I guess a 45 and would play it to the point that I can almost... Oh, goodness. Okay. And this takes a little bit of Price of... We have a little bit of Price is Right music, just while I say this quickly, because 18 years ago today, in 2006, is when Bob Barker announced he was retiring from Price is Right. And, well, that's it.
I didn't... Oh, that was bad. I was trying to get to...
Bob Barker has a great voice.
Doesn't he?
The problem is I have... This is the Price is Right theme, but what happens after we let it play for a little bit, it sounds like this, unfortunately.
The price is wrong.
Mark, because that's the one that we use with George Gray. So, unfortunately, sorry about that, Steve.
That's okay. Yeah, but he retired in 2006. He hosted that show for 35 years, which it's just nuts.
Speaking of game show hosts, did you see Pat Sajak in the crowd behind home plate at the Yankees games?
No.
For all three of the games, he was right behind home plate.
Well, he's got some cash.
No, was Mary Hart there as well?
She was in the LA games.
Well, I know she was at the LA games. Yeah,
Mary Hart? I haven't thought about her.
She's at every game.
Oh, yeah.
She's right behind home plate every game.
I saw the cheapest tickets were like $1,000.
Dang.
For those games.
Wow, dang. That's insane. That's a lot. Okay, Halloween news. The average person started prepping for Halloween and thinking about costumes just over 5 weeks ago. What? Alfredo, you weren't a costume to the driveway tonight?
No, not at all.
But is your wife? Do people?
No, we don't dress up.
Okay. But people in their 20s and 30s have been prepping for 7 weeks. Ethan, what? Is that you? No.
Hell no.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely not.
And people who say they go big on Halloween have been planning since mid-August. Oh, my. Okay, according to the National Retail Federation, we will spend...
I haven't even said it. Crowd did not like that.
$11.6 billion on Halloween this year. What? That's $104 per person. Now, that includes $3.8 billion on costumes, $3.8 billion on decorations, $3.5 billion on candy. How much do you spend on candy? Mark, how much did you think you spent?
My wife actually did the candy shopping this year. I don't know. I'm guessing it was probably $60-$70.
Yeah, that's a lot. Do you get anybody?
No,
yeah.
I'm in an apartment, so I'm clear.
What about you, Fred? Do they come by the fire?
Oh, yeah. We get loads of kids and we have a line. And people that just go through the line and everybody gets something.
You know, I long for the day where you can just grab your dad's jean jacket and put a little charcoal on your face and be a hobo. But that's like politically incorrect. That was my costume for a couple years when I was a kid. You do that now, you get arrested probably.
Do you guys ever wonder how these Halloween stores, like how they are able to
survive through the rest of the year?
But the reason they are is because of what Sue just told us. The amount of money that people spend on this. Though the pop-up stores do very well because, you know, it's a condensed period of time, but it's incredible how people get into this. But we had a costume contest here at the station
today. We did.
Ethan was what? You were Popeye, right?
Well, I had actually two outfits. You only saw one of them. First, before that, I was wearing a Stitch onesie.
Yeah.
And then for Annie's show, they
put
me in.
You mean Stitch as in Lilo and Stitch? Okay, I like that. I appreciate that.
Yep.
My highlight costume was sometime when I was in, I don't know, middle school, and I loved J.J. Walker, and I made a stick of dynamite.
Nice!
Thank you.
Jimmy J.J.
And I wore
Walker.
It with a little,
you know that reference, Ethan?
On the top.
Awesome.
You got it?
No, you don't. Okay. What's happening? Plus, he did talk radio.
Good times. That's the show.
Oh, that was, it was good times, right?
Yeah.
Okay, favorite chocolate Halloween candy is, Fred, what is it?
I think it might be Reese's for me right now.
That is right. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Snickers is number two. Kit Kats, M&M's, and a tie between Butterfinger and the worthless Milky Way.
Give Twix some love out there. Come on.
Nothing in there.
I'm going to have to agree with you on the Milky Way.
Thank you.
And I'm not a big Three Musketeer guy either, though.
Oh, see, I can do that. It's just whipped chocolate. But Milky Way, wah, wah.
See, since
there's nothing in there.
Since I have a relatively small neighborhood, I think there's about 35 houses, and I live amongst the elites. Sometimes we get the full candy bars, right?
Yeah, wow.
That's not a bad deal.
Wow. I don't even know what to say.
But I'm going to harken back to 10 years ago, and this is my favorite thing. I had these two kids that came to my door, the previous house that I was in, and they were not really dressed up. They were like 13 or 14, and they were good kids. They were laughing, and they told me that my neighbor, because they weren't dressed up, gave them a potato instead of candy, and I thought that was just brilliant. So I gave a few potatoes away over the years to kids not dressed up.
That's hilarious.
Oh, that's a classic. We were trying to scramble for stuff today, and all we have is, you know, old peanuts in the shell that are stale.
Any candy corn?
Nobody's got that because it's terrible.
Yeah, it's the same flavor as the
same
old peanuts.
Same as last year. Yeah.
Exactly. And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. All right, this is kind of it's fall, pumpkin-y. Here we go. The average mid-sized pumpkin has approximately 500 seeds inside. Now, those are mostly the ones used for carving. The giant ones you see at fairs and competitions have around 800. And according to the internet, every part of a pumpkin is edible, including the skin, the leaves, the flower, and the stem.
The stem?
And the peduncle.
What did we say the name was?
Peduncle.
Don't you love some peduncle for dinner?
No, thank you.
I'd never heard that the stem was something that you could munch upon.
That'd be a good name. Peduncle could be a good, like, great uncle name.
Peduncle?
Sounds peduncle.
Like something out of the Dr. Seuss.
That's right.
A peduncle for your uncle.
Battleground state of Wisconsin. Big, big state next week. My friend Dan O'Donnell, WISN Radio, joins us next.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
So we got Scott Jennings coming up after 5 o'clock. We finally got a hold of him. You know, he's in rock star status. And it seems like every person that we have on this show, this reflects well on the show, though. Every person goes into superstardom. Look at this one. Dan O'Donnell, my friend from Milwaukee. He's on this morning on with Dana Perino. Listen to what Dana says here.
Dan O'Donnell, I feel like I need to have you on speed dial for election day. Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on and have fun at the rallies.
Oh, I will. Thank you so much, Dana.
Take care, Dan.
It's like 1.5 speed, isn't it?
Great.
Oh, my God, O'Donnell. Am I going to have to work on your ego now, too, along with Jennings? Good Lord. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm nowhere near the stratosphere of Scott Jennings. That guy goes into the lion's den every night and wins. But thank you, Mark. I really appreciate that.
You know what's funny about Jennings, Dan? Maybe no one cares about this. I'm going to share the story with you. We've been friends now for about 8 years. But actually, when I worked up there in Milwaukee at WTMJ, I used to drive to work at like 3 a.m. and I would listen to WHAS in Louisville because you could get the signal up there, 840 on the AM dial. And I knew Joe Arnold, the guy who was doing overnights. His news guy at the time that I was listening to that I had no idea, it didn't sink into, you know, a couple of decades later, was Scott Jennings. He started at HAS doing news in the middle of the night. Then he, you know, worked in the Bush White House, worked for Mitch McConnell. And yeah, he's had quite the summer, hasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. It's almost like every single night there is just an incredible soundbite that comes out, just an amazing clip of him just dropping facts and knowledge and like taking on about 4 different liberals on that god-awful show at once. I mean, he's an incredible, incredible warrior for the conservative cause.
Well, and he's told me, and I don't know if this has changed, but there's a lot of folks there at CNN that do not like his positions, or I don't know if they would say personally don't like him, but CNN management has his back, so that's pretty important. But let's talk about Wisconsin right now, because this is a huge state. I mean, does the garbage truck bit get any better? It's better than the McDonald's bit, wasn't it, Dan?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you talk about a perfect way to draw attention to what might be the most notorious soundbite, as we're talking about those, of the entire election cycle, Joe Biden calling half of the voting public garbage because they don't support him or they don't support Kamala Harris. I mean, you talk about just an incredible way to illustrate that. Kudos to his team for having that garbage truck ready to go. And kudos to him for the 5-minute almost stand-up comedy bit that he did right. about getting in the truck, putting on the vest, and how it made him look slimmer.
I played some of the audio in the monologue of the show. I don't know how you can close any stronger than this. I went back, look, Dan, I'm a radio guy, a terrestrial radio guy. I don't really listen to podcasts. I get that they're a thing. I listened to the whole Joe Rogan podcast. I thought it was fantastic. It really was interesting. You know, they were just two guys talking. I think that was a smart move for him to do that. Kamala wouldn't do it. She wouldn't commit. She wanted conditions. You have everything else that's happened here in the aftermath of the last couple of weeks. I think that the only stumble might have been that comedian on Sunday. And then this happens with Biden, and they negated the whole thing.
Well, that's it, exactly. I mean, and you actually had a reporter on CNN last night who was visibly angry while covering Trump's rally in Green Bay that he dared to change the narrative from those hateful comments about Puerto Ricans. How dare he? We tell you what to think. Donald Trump doesn't ever get to flip the script. Yes, this was a master class in politics. And in fact, taking what was pretty much the only slip that anyone on Team Trump had made in, what, a week? Probably a month, month and a half. I mean, really since the debate. You could make the argument, I think, that the debate on September, what was that, 10th, was the last good day in this campaign for Kamala Harris.
Oh, you could make that case. Like, yeah, you really
right?
could.
It seems like Trump has surged at the exact right time. He has made absolutely no wrong moves, and his team just not properly vetting the jokes of a comedian. I will even give that a slight pass because, yeah, I did think it was sort of offensive. Apparently, Puerto Rico is having garbage problems.
They are.
Trash collector strike. So I guess that was the joke when I'm about as plugged in as it gets in politics. I didn't get the reference. I thought he was just calling Puerto Rico trash.
Well, when you have to explain the joke, it doesn't work. And the room wasn't right. You know, Paul Morrow, who's on Fox, told me the other day, Dan, that there were still people that were kind of flooding into Madison Square Garden. So the crowd wasn't even really listening to everything. And yeah, that did not work very well. But other than that, I think things, and they obviously recovered from that. Now the question becomes, will he win? Will he win your state? Wisconsin's very unusual. And he did win in 2016. I've pointed out many times, Dan, you and I have talked about this. Many, many potential Hillary Clinton supporters stayed home. They did not vote for her. The polling is very close. There might be some shenanigans up there. I know you're on top of that. So what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel right now about your state, Wisconsin?
Well, I think all three of the upper Midwestern swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, all swing together. They have in every single election since the 1980s, meaning if Pennsylvania goes Republican, so too will Wisconsin and Michigan. I'm not totally sold on that as a hard and fast rule, but it is fairly likely. There was just a poll from Echelon Insights released maybe a half hour to an hour ago that shows Trump up 6 in Pennsylvania. Now, I'm not sure if he's up by that much. I tend to believe that he outperforms his polls by about a point to 3 points. There was a Marquette Law School poll, which is sort of like the gold standard of polling here in Wisconsin, that showed him down a point and the race tied in the full field. So head-to-head, he's down 50 to 49. The race is tied in the full field. That probably means he's up 2 to 3 here in Wisconsin. Early voting has been very, very good in heavily Republican counties, which is another good sign for him. Beyond that, I guess a vibe I kind of get is just very pro-Trump in the white working class. And I can tell you the Democrats in Milwaukee, which is, of course, our biggest city and a big source of Democrat votes, they're very concerned that there are a whole lot of Black and Latino men who are going to show up for Donald Trump. So all their get out the vote efforts in Milwaukee are inadvertently going to get Trump votes out there.
I love that. Absolutely. Now, they have a new ad out today, and he said this last night. I think this is a good closing message.
You can't lead America if you don't love Americans. It's true.
And you know, that says a lot. And I think you know what that means, and I know what that means. You got people on the other side that don't love this country. It's been on full display. And I think that deep down, you know, when you mix that up, Dan, with the economy, some of the culture issues, the inability to really move forward with the American dream, and the fact that this administration has done such a horrible job, it's just so hard for me to believe that he's not going to win this thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the reality is that I think it's really taking root with people. I mean, when the media and the Democrats are very upset that Joe Biden stepped on Kamala's message and called Americans trash, and Kamala's message was Americans are actually Nazis if they support Donald Trump, the Adolf Hitler of the 21st century, you know they've got a real messaging problem. And look, this was just Biden saying the quiet part loud, right? Democrats have long had a bit of a thinly veiled contempt for the average voter. My goodness, they disregarded every single one of their own primary voters' votes to just install Kamala Harris when they thought Joe Biden didn't have a chance to win, right? So this is who the party has become. And look, if you look at the just tone of the two campaigns over the last 2 weeks, you've got Donald Trump looking like he's having the time of his life, working at McDonald's and riding in a garbage truck and wearing the vest and just talking about, you know, making America great again and the beauty of America and how great it is. And you've got Kamala Harris saying, if you don't vote for me, we're going to have Nazi rule.
Well, and then
I mean, you can't.
The whole coverage, too, Dan, as you know, look, I was out of town over the weekend. I have a new grandson in Houston, Dan O'Donnell, and I'm driving back and I'm listening to CNN. This was after the Madison Square Garden thing. I wanted to hear what they said. Dark, misogynistic, you know, all these things. It's the opposite of what people who are actually at the events are experiencing. It was interesting yesterday, right, Dan. I don't know if you saw this piece. There was a woman for The Nation who was, you know, that's a very left-wing publication that had to basically admit she went to the rally at Madison Square Garden. She didn't get in, but she had to admit that a lot of the people she was talking to were pretty normal, and they loved the country, yeah, and they just wanted better things for their families. That probably was difficult for her to admit, but there seems to be this extreme disconnect with our friends in the media, and they're going to have some mental issues after next Tuesday, aren't they?
Well, I certainly think so, and I would hope that they would be very subtly priming their audiences for what I'm increasingly convinced is probably going to be the inevitable. I mean, I just cannot shake the feeling. The number 312 is just stuck in my head, the number of electoral votes that Trump is probably most likely to win. I think this is going to be 312 to 226. I think it's probably going to be called reasonably early.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I think what we're getting in states like Michigan is, well, we might not count the votes for another 3 weeks. Okay, well, what possible reason could you have? What possible excuse could you give that a state fraction the size of Florida, like Maricopa County in Arizona, a county is not going to have its votes for a couple of weeks, they said last week, that it might be 1 to 3 weeks before we get all of our results.
That is ridiculous. And the country does not need that.
No, Florida has all of its votes in the third most populous state in the country by like midnight, if not sooner. Okay. So I hope given Republicans' dominance in the swing states, but really all across the country in the early vote, and given the fact that frankly, I think Republicans are still probably going to dominate Election Day, that a 312-226 Electoral College win where Trump just sweeps all of the swing states and probably gets close. I saw Real Clear polling shifted New Hampshire from lean Democrat to toss-up. You know, it would have to be a pretty big blowout for Trump to pick off a New Hampshire or a New Mexico. I know he's going there as well as Virginia. Maybe he sees something in the internal polls that we don't. But I think the most likely scenario is 312 to 226 Trump wins. And we look back on it and say it's not particularly close. In fact, Harry Enten, CNN's polling guru, who is a left winger, but he at least is fair with the data every time he's on. He was on yesterday and said, look, if Trump wins and wins rather easily, it shouldn't be a surprise right. in retrospect.
I played the audio. Yeah, he said, look, the warning signs are on the wall, right? If you look at right. the figure I think he used was 28% of the country feels like we're going in the right direction, just 28%. Now, that seems high to me, given the way we are right now. But when the number's that high, that does not bode well for, you know, the incumbent or the incumbent's running mate. Dan, I got to go because we're out of time. You have fun with these final 3 days, or I guess 4 or 5 days in Wisconsin, and we'll see what happens. I hope your prediction's right, because we need something to be a little bit more decisive to help with the healing in the aftermath, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Thanks as always, Mark.
Hey, it might be the last time I talk to you, though, because you're going to go into Fox Superstardom with Perino and Bill Hemmer. So it was nice knowing you, O'Donnell, okay?
I won't forget the little guys. Don't worry, Mark.
All right, we still have a lot to get to here this afternoon. Jennings coming up after 5 o'clock. On Saturday night at 9 o'clock, CBS, 48 hours. The episode will be called Fatal First Date.
You are the lead crime scene investigator?
Yes.
Were you really prepared for what you faced when you walked into that house?
I was not.
Why would somebody do this to him? Why would they try to hurt my baby? That's all I kept thinking. He's my baby. Someone hurt him.
Going on a first date and they both end up getting shot is insane.
Yeah, this is the story of my friend Chris Smith, and we've shared his story many times. Leslie Reeves was the woman that he was with up in Farmersville, and she was assassinated by her ex-boyfriend. Chris was shot and left for dead. He's with us this afternoon. How are you, Mr. Chris Smith? Are you ready for this 48 Hours debut?
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. You know, they had sent out, Paula Rosa, who's the producer, as you know, they sent out a clip and a preview of this. And let me play this, Chris, because I had never really heard Breon. Breon Smith is not related to you, but she's the young girl, she's only 16 years old, Sue, that looked for you on that fateful Thanksgiving morning because nobody had heard from you, right?
Correct, yes. Family friend's daughter, yes, Breon. Yes, Breon Smith. Yeah, just a coincidence, my friend.
Listen to this.
I saw the back door was broken, and then I saw Chris laying there, and then I ran back to my car and called 911.
Nobody's answering the door, and the back window's shattered, and there's a body, and there's a foot I saw on the floor. I'm only 16. I can't deal with this.
I was in shock, I think.
Sheriff's office, Jeff.
Jeff, give me some help. I got one alive and one dead.
I just remember them bringing Chris out on the stretcher to the ambulance. I remember there being a sheet over him, so it made me panic a little bit.
You know, I know this story pretty well, but I never heard her story of how she found you, and obviously she thought because of the sheet that maybe you did not make that Christmas. So this is going to be an interesting emotional experience for you watching this on Saturday night, won't it?
A little bit, yeah. When I saw this morning, kind of hit me.
Yeah, well, you know, look, I know it's going to be tough, and you're still fighting for getting your life back on track, and we're going to address that after Election Day because you have a procedure that you're going to undergo in Chicago to hopefully restore more movement to your legs. But tomorrow, as you know, we're going to interview from 60 Minutes Aaron Moriarty. I'm sorry, from 48 Hours, Aaron Moriarty, who came in. They came in, a big crew over the summer. They were there when this piece of human debris was convicted and sentenced over the summer for this murder and attempted murder. And they spent a couple of weeks, all told, didn't they, here in St. Louis filming this, Chris?
Yeah, we were together the whole month of June. I love those guys. They're great. I mean, great relationships were formed with 48 Hours cast and crew.
Chris, I've got a question. I've, you know, watched some of these shows quite a bit, and I guess what I'm wondering is as you, as the victim, does this feel cathartic to talk about it? Like, what is your experience when you did the 48 Hours thing?
Well, as Mark says, I'm a camera whore. I love this suit, but no, actually, I enjoy it because I know that my story is helping thousands of people around the world right now.
Yeah, because part of the story, and I think 48 Hours Chris is going to get into this, part of the story is the crime itself.
Right.
What happened to Leslie, what happened to Chris, and you know, my connection with the story, let's face it, that's going to be a big part of it, too. I think I might make a small appearance. But then the rest of the story, I always make it about me, Chris, you know. The rest of the story is your survival coming back and not giving up and being able to try to walk again
exactly.
And all of these other things that you've been doing for the past couple of years.
Yes, that's the really biggest part of the story is what they want to highlight.
Would you share with the audience and with Sue, because I'm not sure she knows what happened about a week ago Saturday?
A week ago Saturday.
Okay. Well, it's a pretty big moment in your life. I believe it involved a ring. Do I need to remind you of this? Seriously?
No, I was just messing with you. So, Elsie, if you remember, because I invited you to be there. You didn't show up.
I know, I didn't show up. You're right.
I know, you have other stuff going on, brother. I was going to tease you. But yeah, I actually got engaged last Saturday, Sue, to a beautiful woman that I've been dating now for the last year and 8 months. And she said yes. I was at my last show of the year at the Defiance Roadhouse. And during the second break, I asked her during the break, I said, hey, Michelle, come up here. I got down on one knee, kind of halfway on one knee, and I said, will you marry me? And she said, hell yes. And Channel 5, KSDK was there. They filmed it too. And
Chris. So
I'm making a movie. I really am making a movie script.
Well, you should be.
That's
look, Michelle
awesome.
Is awesome. I've gotten a chance to know her, why she wants to spend the rest of her life with Chris, I'll never know. But she is a fine, fine woman. There's no doubt. Well, are you having a little bit of a watch party on Saturday night, too, for this?
Yes, we'll be at the Mellow Mushroom in Cottleville, Missouri. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I know that this has been kind of a long time coming. Chris spent, I think you were very proactive in trying to get this story on the radar because you felt that it was a story that deserved to be told. I felt that as well, and I'm so glad that the crew from 48 Hours came in. And Erin's going to share, her version of why they were interested in this story tomorrow night in the 5 o'clock hour. I know they're very excited to finally get this on the air. And this would be, I always kind of forget, was this the third year anniversary or the fourth coming up on Thanksgiving?
This will be the third year anniversary on 11/24.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Somewhere between 11:30 and midnight.
All right,
that's what they say.
The whole country is going to see the story 48 hours on Saturday night. Chris, we're going to talk soon. All right, hang in there. Enjoy the weekend.
Congrats, Chris.
Yep, take care.
Thank you, Sue. Bye bye.
Jennings coming up. We might have lost him for good after all this CNN excitement, but he's coming up next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app